explain you later why. So that's what I'm going to do. And belonging is not, I mean, belonging is a field in, I think anthropologists all relate to it, one way or the other. I do not pretend I read all the work. I think my belonging and my impressions and ideas come much more from my own and others' empirical work. Theories indeed evolve, I think, while doing fieldwork or while reading. And then they evolve, so they can never be a blueprint. You should allow for change in your theories and ideas. And in that sense, I think I do not so much relate to anthropologists who do explore concepts and their relations, as Oliver was referring to, for sort of a general impression of what anthropologists do. Some do, but not all. I do relate more to this grounded theory, maybe phenomenology. Developing theories while exploring the field, discovering that many concepts do not fit, and of course trying to relate to existing ideas, but also always trying to develop new challenging ones. And as I said earlier as well, I hope I can convince people with what I finally write and present. That's the most important thing to do. Well, in this presentation, then, I cannot do otherwise than share my own field experience with you. I'm basically working with qualitative research, as you probably now understand. And I'm not working on my own. I always work in teams with PhD and MA students, senior researchers in African, based in African and European universities. And I think that's also very interesting. When you work in teams, you are really discovering. Especially when you are together in the field, it's revealing to do that, and I would advise you also as PhD, try to link up to people who are in the field and discuss there what your projects and concepts are about, because then you develop. Of course, ideas are also developed in a personal trajectory. Oliver and Lauren gave their personal background during their talk, and they did it a little bit in the end. And I think I should start with it, so at least you can position me. I will not start with my parents, although my father was an ethnographer, so it comes from somewhere. But I will start just with work experience, and to be honest, it's not very complicated. I'm an academician. I started as an anthropologist, and I'm still an anthropologist. When I was 19 years old, I thought, that's it, and I stayed in it. But I did always work in teams, also economists, climatologists, meteorologists. Well, sometimes difficult, sometimes not, but still I keep my anthropology identity, whatever that may be. I did my PhD in 1995 while studying, I studied nomadic societies, and that is this slide, that's where I was 2 years, and tried to involve and get engaged with these people and understand what their lives are about. But I was also involved in research after that around topics of climate change, conflict, communication technology, and maybe development studies, development anthropology. But a few years ago, when I came back from Chad, where I worked in war and conflict zones, I decided that I had to stop with this development orientation. And I took up some threads from the former work, analyzing processes of change from the angle of mobility. I sort of reviewed my work and said it has always been with mobile people, and I will come back to that later. So that's how this thinking about mobility started. And I was therefore not at all interested in migration. I was really interested in how do people move? How does that inform their daily lives? And how then do they inform social change? Do they? Or is mobility something always a continuation, and is it something that people make part of their lives? Well, anyhow, in migration studies, mobility is often seen as a rupture, and I did not like to do it that way. My recent work, then, is in relation to communication technology, and that's really a new wave. I did that because it's these areas where mobile people come from. These areas became connected to mobile technology in the 19 1998, I think, the first bigger urban centers were connected, but then the rural zones in 2006, 2007, some 2005. And I saw tremendous changes, also in mobility patterns, and I thought that's something we have to follow. So I'm now working in a laboratory. It's happening. I try to relate the development of modern technology to patterns of mobility and social change. And well, I will only refer to that a little bit because I will basically talk about belonging and mobility, but I will show how it also sort of informs belonging. In the course of all this research work, we engaged in different discussions, or it said so, different concepts, all kind of. And what was. I'm probably a bit of a rebel. I always thought these concepts do not fit my situation. And I think that's a good point for starting a discussion with yourself about your work. And that's a starting point to just read literature but do nothing with it, which is probably not the best. But you use it in your head and then you put something new on paper because you want to be different. Anyhow, that was a little bit an attitude that has to do with personality, I think. And indeed, I realized that concepts are in development anthropology, concepts in other more established anthropological debates did not really cover this mobility the way I wanted to look at it. It with the changes that I saw, what I call in the social fabric. So I, in my search for other concepts, I linked up with terms like navigation, uncertainty, and indeed belonging, and not so much identity. In this lecture further, I try to then unravel these thoughts, and I hope you do not mind that it's sort of, yeah, it's a reflection, and you challenge me to make it. It's not something that I had already somewhere in a drawer. In fact, it developed over the past few days, and it was sort of resembling all that I'm already doing. So, in our research, we work with the term cultures of mobility, or mobile culture. And we delve then from there in a discussion to the practice of who are we, who are they, who are the people who live in these mobile cultures. So what we want to understand when we talk about belonging is not so much what are exactly the patterns, but what does that do with people who are there. So it's a question on who are the people in these mobile cultures and how do they form them and how those patterns of mobility inform their feelings of belonging and their being. So it's time to see to explain to you a bit what do I mean by mobile cultures or traveling cultures or cultures of migration, some may call them. One student, when I had a discussion in class, she asked me, but then it was a new group, first lecture. She said, after I explained anthropology of mobility, what is defined probably best by Salazar in a very recent article, 2010. Then she asked, so you mean that mobility is part of people's thinking? That they relate more to being mobile than to being in a place. And okay, I said, yes, that's what I mean. And then we came into a discussion on habitus. I mean, what does that mean? What kind of world are people then living in? And how does this world become a normal world for people? So being mobile for many people in our world is their world. It's not that they think of that as an anomaly. They live in it, and they work with it, and that's how they take their decisions. And that's the environment. Varela, in 1992, gave a definition of a transnational habitus. And I think that's a very interesting concept to work with. So when you talk about belonging, habitus, you sort of see, okay, this is something people have in their being. It's informing their social fabrics, informing their social relating. But of course, that it's not always the same, and it depends on context, on types of mobility, it depends on histories of mobility, But in all this, what is central in the study are these people who are connected through these mobilities and how they do define themselves and how do they relate. So people in these mobile societies can be mobile, but they can also be immobile. Immobile people are not mobile. They are related to people who move, and we've been discussing this here. But it takes, if you take it that way, you're no longer in that dualistic division, right? You're no longer in that dichotomy, away from oppositions, towards continuities and dynamics. So I sort of, I don't think I need to give more comments. Maybe one is that in mobile cultures do carry all power relations that we know from other societies, from other studies. They do carry hierarchies. It's in these mobile relations society is produced. I already told you this. And I give you here some pictures of these people who move from Senegal to the Canary Islands in boats. These are two pictures of a fishery, people who are fishing, fishery communities. And it's interesting to see, and that's then probably, we did a study among these people. They relate to this story of the Canary Islands from their past. They have a long past of mobility, fishermen, and they are the main figures in this whole migration. And they see it as a continuation of what they always did. And people who sit in their boats are probably their new fish. Well, anyhow. Just another take of the thing. And then what I of course, as a final thing, in these mobile communities today, we cannot deny the incoming of new communication technology. And belonging, in that sense, has become really something different, and I will show you that, by portraying three mobile cultures that I am studying. And I can only do it very briefly. I mean, probably I try to present you almost a book, but it's, I will try. So I will give you only some elements of these mobile cultures, and then I will come back to what then, if we look at these mobile cultures and belong that way, what do we learn from it? And how did it help us to understand these societies better? Mobile cultures do have a strong historical dimension. That's what it makes a normality for people. These nomads in the Sahel have a long history of mobility by themselves, but also I did research among Fulani for long. They are the traveling culture par excellence. They've been, when you look at their history, it's a history of travel, of empires traveling, of their, the Islam came in, but it's also a form of Islam that has many traveling aspects. All their histories, all their memories are full of displacement, also negative sense, I mean droughts and all kind of crises. But crises are part of life, so they look back at these in terms like, okay, yeah, this happened to us, and that's why we are here. It's not something that, yeah, you can define it as crisis and see it as problems, and of course it is, but many people die, and there's all things that you can define as really problematic that we have to help and change. Well, they're happy that these things might change one day, but they never will. They will always be confronted with these, and they better integrate them into their system, and that's what they do. It's sort of, when you analyze their kinship system, for instance, it's so flexible. Everything is possible, and it allows them to go everywhere where they want to go, because you can define everybody as your brother, sister, or whatever. And this flexibility has to do with their perception also of their own society, and they need it as well. So it's a maybe I call them traveling cultures par excellence, and you see I use these different terminologies a little bit fluid, and I'm still working on, do I need to really define them? What is the difference between traveling culture and a mobile culture? Well, maybe we can discuss that later. But traveling cultures come from James Clifford, who introduced this term using examples of people living in hotels, people for him who had no real home and always in transit, like us here, maybe. Nomads do not live in hotels, but they live in huts. They have things they can carry along. Or they only build a shelter to be protected against rain or sun. They move around with their cattle the whole year, but it's not movement just like that. They have a pattern in it. There's a thought about this mobility. It's not just like that. And of course, sometimes there are ruptures, but there's droughts, there's, as I already explained, these were the part of their history. So they're not, for them, they do not perceive them as ruptures. We do, but they don't. They depict themselves as birds, and they are. The kinship system, I already explained, is a way to move, and yesterday we talked about networks. I think for them, they have a sort of a network in the making all the time. They're always defining relations. And there is a whole system which is very flexible of hosts and receiving people in the south, in the north, today in southern Nigeria. They are everywhere. And they feel, everywhere they are, as long as there's some people around them that they know, they feel at home. Because they travel often in small groups, brothers, sisters. So they take their home with them, so to say. So they always belong, because they belong to people. And of course you can say that, well, it sounds beautiful, but it's too romantic. There's so many ruptures in these societies, but I really contest it a little bit. What is now happening, and that's today, nomads are also embracing new lifestyles. They move to towns and think they sedentarize. That's what the politics of the state also want them to do, to sedentarize. But that's not their impression what they are doing. They say, oh no, we go, we live there for a while, and then we buy a house, and we can go out. And what they do, they engage in jobs that make them mobile, like taxi drivers, truck drivers, or all kind of these kind of settings. So they sort of continue that mobile lifestyle. And it's interesting. I think it's really, it makes them also a specific type of people to work with. This was about history, sorry, I forget the pictures. This is my brother in the camp. And this is probably a nice picture to show that indeed they have a culture of traveling. Children play, then they travel. This child is taking its mat, rolling it. Later he puts it on his hat and will walk like his mother will do when they move the camp. But things are changing. Today we observe a tendency of difficulties. Access to pasture become difficult. Nomads' rights are not really recognized, and it's recently leading to huge problems. Everywhere in Africa, they are chased as strangers. It's a bit probably I'm exaggerating, but that's what is happening, and I'm observing it everywhere. Different ways why they are chased away, no longer having access to their way of life, which also means that we are denying them belonging, which is, I think, a quite difficult situation for them. And the most clear example of how this happens is of when you see Fulani who are now increasingly also interned in refugee camps because of these conflicts, for instance, in Central Africa. They are chased away. You find them now in camps in Cameroon. In these camps, they really feel borders. And they are traumatized. These people cannot live when they are not having their own idea of mobility. And they literally say, for us, it's over. We do not belong in their terms. I think that's enough about this nomadic society, which, of course, is a certain type of mobility. And then, today they are connected. And in this connection, the first thing they do is calling their relatives who are in the south of Mali and trying to link up. The phone is now replacing their traveling as a communication strategy. Let's go to chat. These examples, what I try to do is show you that there are so many different mobilities, but there is always this similar feeling of being mobile and having a certain belonging to people instead of places, and getting along with this belonging and changing your life or whatever. Chad, Central Chad, Central Africa, in the middle, since 65 war. everywhere rebels, problems, droughts, well, more crises are almost impossible. And this is a country where I worked a year, go back there every year, but it's horrible. It's that's a good word to depict it, maybe. This political continuous political insecurity leads, of course, you all know, to displacement. People are moving because rebels are fighting in their villages. They're chased away by the soldiers, or the government tells them to move. And this is now going on in Chad. And I will not go back to the time before the 60s, because then it was also going on. Empires that were there did the same, but it's going on already for 40 years, which in Chad means two generations almost, because people die early. So in this political insecurity, people become mobile. And then how do they make their feeling of being somewhere? That's a different story than the nomads, I would say. So belonging in a society where mobility is related to political insecurity, you have a totally different discourse on this, who we are and where we belong. People are dispersed by force, not out of free will. But still, they refer to a history of this. So again, you could say, but that is then part of their lives. And indeed, they have developed ways to deal with it. And I will not go into all these details. But it's interesting to see that the social fabric then, or the social relations, are built around escaping political security, are built around a very basic being, I would say. Making your living out of nothing is not easy. So, but still, what is then very important is that you are related and that you know that you have relatives. So people do really try their best to get in contact with their people who fled the area, or people who are there. People who are back always talk about those who are away. But there's also always tensions, because they never know. They can also be chased next year. And indeed, it happens. In 2008, there were rebels in central Chad chasing away people. In 2009, they came again. People come back. They go away. And so there's a whole culture of mobility, but then around political insecurity, which is not very easy, especially not when you live in an area like this, where it's already very hard to live. But people say, okay, it's difficult, but we were chased away in the past. We even came to these areas because there were these slave raiders. And they refer to droughts. So again, you can see that it's a narrative of society in which they refer to being mobile, to being displaced. These are the villages these people come from, where I did my studies. So what then is interesting, when you see now the development of mobile phones, and this area, which is central Chad, phones came in 2007 only, so we were really observing what was happening. People immediately, really immediately, those who are outside of that area, living around Jamena, they could not get phones, as sooner the better. And they started trying to get phone numbers of people there. And they linked up, and now they're on the phone every day. And you could say, well, why do these people do that? Spending so much money on a device that seems to be a luxury. But it's not. It's a necessity in a mobile culture. And I think especially in a culture where it's because of political insecurity that you're also dispersed. So that's an interesting thing. So people see in this mobile phone culture almost in that area, they relate again, they are reconstructing the social fabric. And in reconstructing this social fabric, they do this on distances, and that's what I would say, then they really become a mobile community, a community over space. And it's only now that you sort of see that happening, because when you're dispersed, you're a mobile community, but you do not communicate, so maybe you're just dispersed. Although political insecurity also leads to a lot of disconnection in these phones, because what rules the social fabric in Chad is fear and non-trust. So this phone also brought in new fears. And some people have decided not to use their phone anymore, to disconnect from the whole world and hide somewhere in the bush, because they're so afraid that they will be taken by the government as rebels. So you see, there's a lot of disconnection. Mobile cultures, but people are then even more mobile. So disconnection, connection go together in these same societies. Just an example of other mobile societies in Chad related to war. For instance, street people in N'Djamena, they're very mobile, and well, here you see them repairing their flip-flops. Just to see that there's such a variety. These people do not have phones, but they have the expectation of phones. But they don't have relatives. They are mobile in the city. Their relatives jumped off. They disconnected from their relatives, so they have created new communities, very mobile as well, and these are the refugee camps in Eastern Chad. Just, I did not want to relate only to the these are war-related mobilities, one could say. Then we go closer to the type of mobility that we have been discussing so far during these few days. Where did I put this? This is Cameroon. I work in the Northwest Province, but I work, of course, beyond the Northwest Province because people cannot stay there because it's ecologically not really sustainable for too many people, so moving out of the area is of a very old date, and people have even developed a style of talking about it, and it's compared to the other two, it's completely different mobility. People really go out of economic for economic reasons. It's often middle class. But they relate in their stories about being mobile, going to Europe and the US, to, I mentioned it briefly, to a term that is bush pulling, which means we fall bush, we go out to hunt and bring game back. That's what they did in the past. That's what they remember even in their stories that they tell to their children. And this bush pulling first was extended to the plantations. When the colonial governments came in, plantations, the German made plantations at the coast, and the Northwest Province was a reservoir for labor. So people were taken there, and you could say, okay, it's exploitation, it's terrible. No, people were happy to go there. They came back with lamps. And then I interviewed one woman in the Northwest Province. She showed me the oil lamp from the 1940s that she kept in her house as a sign of, look how modern I am. That was interesting. So you have this whole idea that it was good to go out, come back. Nevertheless, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are. You go out, you come back. So it's another form of internalizing mobility in a society. Another form of mobility, another form. But mobile connections were always there. People were traveling a lot, connecting to each other, etc., etc. So in that sense, you have also to see the story of families there, all their stories. There's almost no family who has no people abroad, or who has no people living in Douala or Yaoundé, in the big towns, or working in Nigeria or Gabon or wherever. All families sent their people away. It's the bush falling that is relevant for the survival of the family. And it's interesting that these stories are also closely related to technologies, and I show you here the picture of a car of a family I'm trying to follow in their movements. And their father was the first to have a car, and that made this family very mobile. They went to Nigeria, they went everywhere. But at the same time, the family is part of a kingdom in the area, so they have very strong relations also in the Northwest Province, although they always went out. So it's a, and I think that's an interesting sort of, they really, and they also play with the word belonging in their language. They all belong to that place. And when you are there at Christmas, in Christmas, people clothed like her, with this modern style clothing, showing that you are really a little bit poshy. They all come back from these towns. They come back from the USA. They come back from Europe. And they show off in the village what they brought back. They are the bushwalkers. They are the people who helped to get the society further. And that's a very interesting interpretation, again, of mobility and of belonging, because they are indeed all buried back home. And that's also some kind of meeting point where everybody comes together, which is a very important moment to define who you are in that society. So the belonging goes with the traveling moments of these people who are abroad. I leave it to that. Then what is, of course, also in these societies, the mobile phone makes them very, very mobile indeed. But also, they are able to link up, to tell each other that really we are still there. People are even chased. I mean, if you want to disconnect today, it's no longer possible. People will just find you and create that sort of border around this mobile culture. You belong to us. Although you are in the US, I call you every day or I call you every week, and you have to come back when your father is buried, or you have to be sure that you have an insurance so you can come back. All these kind of things. And today people say we can no longer escape. And we know we belong. But that's a complete different kind of expression of belonging than those nomads or the people who fled political insecurity in Chad. These situations, why do we use belonging? Why do I not refer to identity? I think these short ethnographic sketches, what do they learn us? What do I try to communicate to you? In the research, it's essential to understand how people create their lives, yeah? And who they are in mobile spaces, and how mobility does indeed inform their being. We want to know these kind of things, not just because we want to know it, but it is about a world that is moving, and I think moving in our world is so central. And I can cite a lot of people who are sharing these ideas today. And of course, these examples invite for a lot of discussion, and probably it's time for me as well to start to theorize, to reflect on, and the reflection on the notion of belonging may help me, especially to contextualize the belonging of the people in these different situations. One point of departure is that mobility, or if you want, migration, is not considered an anomaly by these people. No, it's the center of their lives. It's, if you want to, so their livelihood. We work with belonging instead of identity, appartenance, and not with identité, although it's difficult also to. There's been so much critique on the use on identity, especially the main critique is, of course, that it's so essentializing. I don't know if I totally agree with it, but I see that identity is a little bit more static. It's, you have to add a lot of words to the term identity to make it fit to a certain dynamic and process. The word belonging already has process and dynamic in it. And that's why it fits so well when you try to analyze mobility and people's feelings of belonging in this mobility. We can relate then more to social relating and to bridging. And I think that's the essence of what we should try to understand. It also relates to people's feelings, to their psyche. So we enter a little bit into understanding mental maps. Belonging is not something that is simply there. It is clearly socially constructed. It is a dialogue between people, and I hope that it's clear from the examples that that's what it is. It is not an intrinsic feature of people. When one tries to understand changes in belonging, it is automatically a research for changes in social relations, in the social fabric, but also in these definitions of belonging by outsiders. So it's a whole web. It's a continuous negotiation. And it's also a negotiation about who is allowed to belong, and others may be denied to belong. It gives room for discussion we had about mobile cultures, and what about people who are not mobile. They are, however, linked to these societies, and their belonging and the way they phrase it is linked to those people who move out. They depend on them even. So it's part of this discussion. And of course, within this process of belonging, people will use different identities and portray themselves at different moments. So identity is not out of the discussion. The term will come back. Why then is it so important to understand these processes of belonging? I think the cases have shown that it's belonging is a way to translate mobility beyond dichotomies, beyond borders. It does as well interpret the mobile aspect of people's lives in very meaningful ways. It leads us into a discussion of the social as a form of belonging, a form that's constantly renegotiated, but not renegotiated in a chaotic way. There's a certain logic, and the logic is linked to the context of the different mobilities of these societies that I depicted. The cases of the nomads and the people in Cameroon show that belonging is also politicized. As soon as belonging is related to resources, land, water, goods, people will have and try to make a bigger claim to belong. Belonging then becomes politics. There we see as well that the forms of mobility that differ in these communities influence this process differently. And finally, claims that can be made differ, and consequences of these claims for the social fabric differ. For instance, in the case of the Fulani, they can no longer claim that well their belonging. They sort of lose out. In the case of Cameroon, they claim their belonging increasingly by bringing the bodies of the deceased back home. And according to other researchers as well, this is a process that is, it is not of today, but it's really increasing. People tend to bring more people home, and with more ritual and more expensive shows. So to show that really this is us, we are here, we belong. So it has become, belonging also allows you to describe this more political fight, the fight for rights. Belonging also is a concept and a way of understanding the glue of society. It helps us to understand these, for me in my recent research, it gives you an interpretation of communication. What does that mean? Eh? The forms of belonging also inform the way people use technologies to communicate. Belonging is power. And as soon as outsiders start to use belonging in their rhetorics, it becomes also reason for war. So, many reasons to refer and to do research on belonging. I think I want to stop with this map. I sketched three different mobile cultures, mobile societies. And probably in the last phase of these societies, the last phase of these societies is the integration of mobile technologies. And I hope that you can read with me in these short ethnographies that there is a tendency now for people to create borders around their mobile societies and to exclude some of them and some not. So I was inspired by Ferguson, who was talking about these global shadows, that there's sort of a formation of new borders that deny national borders along over the continents, in which we find people who define themselves as belonging to these mobile communities with all kinds of values and rules, excluding others, creating, in fact, a new world. And I think that's an interesting reflection to use as well when I will analyze what is happening in the Netherlands, because you see that people indeed are sort of retreating in their own mobile communities with their own shops, their own ways of doing, their own communication, and they then become increasingly the outsiders and the strangers. What has happened to the Fulani already long ago is now happening also to the migrants who come from Cameroon. So I want to stop there and.